Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, August 20th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron is out and about and working and stuff. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. All about me. I had a very exciting week. I don't know if I mentioned last week that I had gotten a mammogram callback, which means that I had to go back and get another look at something that was going on in my left breast. So what happened was I had a spot compression, and they looked at it, and there was a small spot. It was called an isodense asymmetry, which means that there was a spot on the left side that wasn't the same as the right side. So they had to look at it again. I have dense breasts and I have fibroglandular tissue in my breasts. So this one spot is very small. They looked at it and they found when they did the spot compression that it did smush out, that in other words, it flattened, which means it's more likely to be fibrous tissue than to be something malignant. And the radiologist told me I also had to have an ultrasound. When we looked at the ultrasound, he noted that all of the tissue around this spot was absolutely normal. There was normal fatty tissue, there was normal glandular tissue, and there were no concerning calcifications and no changes in architecture. So when they looked at it, they said, you have to come back in 6 months. No, you don't need a biopsy right now. I don't think it's cancer, but we want to just make sure that in 6 months' time that there's no change. And if there's no change, then you're good for a year. So it looks like it's good. So they, BI-RADS is the way that they note the level of change in breast tissue. And BI-RADS 0 or 1 is normal, and BI-RADS 3 is probably benign. It's a finding that is probably benign. So I'm in BI-RADS 3, probably benign. I haven't actually gotten the MyChart records yet. I don't think they've come back yet. No, so I haven't been notified from MyChart. So it's not in my MyChart yet. So anyway, so that's what's going on. The issue was that I had the mammogram 2.5 weeks before I was scheduled for the follow-up, and I tried to call them to see if I could get it moved up, and I was not able to make it work for a time that worked for me and them. So I had to wait 2.5 weeks to have this done. So my heart goes out to you. If you're a woman who gets a mammogram, you get a screening mammogram because you think you're doing the right thing, and you're, you know, every year you're getting your checkup like you're supposed to, and so that they find something early. If they find something early, it's much more likely to be able to be taken care of very early. And in my case, it would have been extremely early, so that would have been good. But also, if you get called back and then you're forced to wait a couple of weeks, what they told me is that various area hospitals, that I had not waited as long as I could have if I'd gone to a couple of the other area hospitals that are not a little bit further from my home. So there, and the other thing I understand is that there are places that you can go that they give you an answer that day. So I may look into that for next year. The thing is, I really like the radiologist at Wyndham Hospital. He was this adorable man. His name is Michael Tallarico, and he is the head of radiology at Wyndham Hospital. He came in to say hello to me because after the ultrasound was done, the tech, Lexi, she came in and she said, "All right, you have to have a follow-up in 6 months. It's probably benign, but you need a follow-up in 6 months." And I went, "What?" And she said, "Would you like to talk to the radiologist?" I said, "Absolutely." So I waited a little longer. The radiologist came in and he bounced in like he was Tigger. He was so adorable. And he came in and said, "Hi, I'm Mike Tallarico. I'm from the Tallaricos from upstate New York." And I said, "Oh, I know somebody named Tallarico who works at the Mansfield Library. That's very nice." And he said, "Did you know that Steve Tyler from Aerosmith's name is actually Tallarico?" And I said, "Yes, I did know that. I looked that up and I thought that was so funny that he changed his name from Tallarico to Tyler." So we went off about Aerosmith, and poor Lexi, who's probably in her 20s, has no idea who Aerosmith is, nor Steve Tyler. And, you know, I think this gentleman is in his 30s or 40s. So he looked like he was a fair bit younger than me, but older than her. And so we had a whole talk about the kinds of music we like, about Aerosmith. And I finally got from her that she likes R&B from the 90s, which is very cute. Meanwhile, I interrupted him and said, "Doc, do I have cancer?" And he says, "No, I don't think you have cancer. No, you're not going to need a biopsy." And when he realized that I was medically oriented, he spent a good half hour with me giving me a lesson on what we were seeing on the ultrasound. And he explained everything to me. He explained to me all of the architecture, everything that we were seeing on the ultrasound. It was very, very impressive. And I really appreciated him taking care of me and spending that time with me. And he also said to me, "If anything happens, if anything changes, you have any concerns, you call me, you get a hold of me and you can talk to me." I was so impressed. So I had been thinking about going to another system, because this was in the Hartford healthcare system, and that really impressed me, that he was standing there able to educate me and reassure me. And so even though I had to wait 2.5 weeks and it was very stressful, it turned out to be worth it. And in the moment, I'm mostly in the clear, and I have to go back in 6 months. So now we're just waiting on approval for my laminectomy, which I had talked to Dr. Lantner last week, and we had talked about, I had agreed to do a laminectomy, and that's supposed to occur in mid-September, as long as my, I pass my pre-op physical as well as that my insurance improves it. So we're waiting for that, and I'm excited about getting that, because then I'm hoping I'll have less ongoing, intermittent pain in my leg. What's going on right now is I'm pretty good. I rode 3 days in a row. I rode my bike on Saturday about 20 miles. I rode and then rode on Sunday much shorter, and today much shorter as well. And I'm okay. I need to keep doing my PT exercises. That keeps me in line. I didn't sit on a boat. God bless my friend Rob for taking me on the boat. But sitting on the boat, I think, aggravated me, because it was just a lot of upright sitting, which doesn't work for me really. But yesterday I had a short bike ride. I did my PT exercises. I did easy yoga. I had a much easier day. And so I'm pretty good today. So and I'll have to do my PT exercises later as well. So that's what's going on with that. Ron is working. He's back to work. He's back to the, next week. He's going to start teaching spinning at the community center. The community center's off this week, and he's back working for the town of Mansfield, his farm to families, and the registrar of voters. So he's doing well. He just gets sore at the end of the day, and he has to lie down, and he has to do ice. But he's doing very well. So I think we're moving right along here. It's great. Okay, so let's go back to talking about the Mediterranean diet. Why the heck is the Mediterranean diet so healthy? And we talked about we talked a bit about the Mediterranean diet last week. And ultimately, unless for some reason you really need to be on a very low carbohydrate diet, like you have seizure disorder, or it's the only way you can be at a healthy weight, or you have a lot of inflammation and you have to go on a very low carb diet, Mediterranean diet, the basis of the Mediterranean diet, if you eat in that realm, you're going to tend to be a lot healthier. So it has, that inflammation has a lot of reputation for hurting your body, but in small doses, it's good for you. It helps to fight off foreign invaders like viruses and bacteria, and then goes away once the threat is gone. But when it doesn't let up, it can lead to development of type 2 diabetes, heart disease, dementia, and cancer. A common risk factor for chronic inflammation, including age, is a high-fat, high-sugar diet. If you eat the right foods each day, it can help to keep that chronic inflammation at bay. And so the foundation of anti-inflammatory eating, it's going to shock you when I say it to you. Fruits and vegetables that are high in antioxidants, olive oil, whole grains, legumes like beans, and beans and pulses and things like that. Lean protein and food high in omega-3 fatty acids. Shocking, right? So when you eat the Mediterranean diet, it emphasizes those foods. It's backed by a lot of research. After older adults followed this plan for 6 months, they had lower levels of inflammatory markers in their blood. And those who didn't and followed the usual diet did not have those the lowering of those factors. So to follow a Mediterranean style eating plan, the thing is you have to like produce, and not everybody does. I have patients who they're not big on fruits and vegetables and they don't eat them all the time. And here I am trying to eat them every single day. Fruit is always a nutritious choice. There's evidence that cherries and berries in particular can lower inflammation. There's a lot of plant nutrients, polyphenols, carotenoids. Sweet or tart cherries was linked with decreased markers of inflammation in 11 studies. And those same compounds are in other berries like cranberries, strawberries, and blueberries, and have been found to lower the body's inflammatory response. You can add them to your morning oatmeal or defrost them and put them in a smoothie. Greens and beans. When you eat dark leafy green vegetables, it can lower inflammation by increasing antioxidant levels. There's a study that looked at the benefits of vegetables. Antioxidants help balance unstable molecules that can damage your tissues, and the decreased stress on the body leads to lower inflammation. And in one of these studies, eating about 2.5 cups of dark leafy green vegetables a day helps slash your C-reactive protein, which is a marker of body-wide inflammation, by about 66% in about 6 months. Beans and legumes like lentils and chickpeas offer a lot of healthy protein. The fiber and antioxidant compounds are known for preventing inflammation. You can, again, kale can be blended, kale and spinach can be blended into a morning smoothie with fruit. For beans and legumes, you can eat it as soup. Then extra virgin olive oil has a lot of plant compounds. One of the compounds is oleocanthal, and it targets the same pathways as the pain reliever ibuprofen, which is going to be your LOX and your lipoxygenase and your cyclooxygenase. When you taste an olive oil that has the compound, you'll feel that bitter spiciness in your throat. Some of the olive oil you eat should be uncooked, so make sure you put some, you dip vegetables into, you can dip vegetables in garlic. One great way to eat it is to take avocado and steam it, not avocado, sorry, artichoke, and steam it, and then dip it in olive oil and eat it that way. And the olive oil can have garlic in it, which will make it even healthier for you. Fermented foods are important on the Mediterranean eating plan. So yogurt, kefir can reduce inflammation. I try to get people to consume kefir. Kefir is a little more, how you say, rank. It's stronger smelling because there's more lactic acid in it. And the reason there's more lactic acid in it is because there are more probiotic species in kefir than there are in yogurt. And the species in kefir persist in your body longer than the species in yogurt. So it's very good for you. If you can't eat dairy, you can get aqua kefir, which also has a lot of species in it. I don't know if it has all the same species as dairy kefir. But kefir can reduce inflammation by improving the diversity and activity of your gut bacteria. So they found that blood levels of 19 inflammatory proteins decreased significantly in healthy adults who ate a lot of fermented foods, they ate an average of 6 servings per day for 10 weeks. And those who were asked to eat a high fiber diet didn't have the same decrease in inflammatory proteins. So fermented is even better for you than just eating a lot of fiber. So get some fermented foods on board. Fermented foods can be any kind of fermented vegetable. It can be fermented pickles. So you want to get pickles that are in the refrigerator case, and they say that they're unpasteurized. You can go to the Willy Co-op, and they have a whole section of fermented vegetables. They have fermented carrots, beets, sauerkraut, which is cabbage, and they have kimchi. Kimchi is spicy, so kimchi is a traditional cabbage combination. And kimchi can have cabbage in it. When you buy kimchi in the store, it might have just cabbage. I think traditional kimchi is just fermented cabbage, fermented in a certain style in Korean tradition. And you can buy kimchi that has other things in it. So I have a kimchi that has seaweed in it. And I think it has some other vegetables, might have some onions and garlic in it. Then there's tomato sauce. Remember that tomato sauce, when you eat tomato sauce, When you cook tomatoes, the levels of lycopene are much more bioavailable, and lycopene is a wonderful carotenoid that helps to reduce prostate cancer and breast cancer risks, and helps with general inflammation. And this idea that you need to avoid eating the nightshade family because of arthritis, there's not a lot of good research that shows that nightshades cause inflammation. And as I said last time you heard me, is that that if you eat nightshades and you don't feel good, you shouldn't eat them. If you eat a food and you don't feel good in any way, you don't have to eat the food. You heard that here. Even if it's a food that's so-called good for you. If you eat tomatoes and they make you sick, don't eat the tomatoes. But this idea that solanine, the alkaloid that's in that's in the nightshade family, gives you inflammation, there's not a lot of great research on that. And if you can eat tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and peppers, and you don't feel increased inflammation, then you can go ahead and eat them. I believe maca is also a nightshade. Maca is, they call it a South American potato. And maca is something that people eat as an alternative. It's an adaptogen. It helps you with general health. It helps to balance hormones. It helps to increase energy. And it is also a nightshade. Let me just double check that I'm not lying about that. Is maca a nightshade? Let's see. No, maca is an oops. Don't listen to me. Maca is not a nightshade. Maca is a cruciferous vegetable. I get that confused. I knew it's a common thing that's good for you, but maca is not a nightshade. It is a cruciferous vegetable. It is in the same family as broccoli and cauliflower and cabbage and mustard greens. So never mind. Yeah. So anyway, but the solanaceae, the nightshade family, your tomatoes, potatoes, eggplant, and peppers, if you don't feel inflamed when you eat them, you can eat them. It's just that it was Mikio Kushi who was the diet that he promoted. He said people should not eat nightshades because they're not good for you. Again, if you eat nightshades and you don't feel good, you don't have to eat them. It's the macrobiotic diet that he recommended. In macrobiotics, you don't eat nightshades. So fatty fish, oily fish like salmon, sardines, mackerel, and anchovies have a lot of omega-3 fats. When people at risk for heart disease and type 2 diabetes ate the fish twice a week for 8 weeks, they saw lower blood levels of inflammatory markers like C-reactive protein. So you don't need to spend a lot of time in the kitchen, a lot of kitchen time or money on fish. The kinds that are mentioned are available in cans or pouches a couple of times a week. Pop one open. You can put it on leafy greens, top it with fresh oil or herbs like basil or dill, drizzle with olive oil, and off you go. All right. So because I have a lot of patients who they're not great about cooking. They get home, they're exhausted from their day, and they don't do a lot of cooking and making something with protein in it. High omega-3 fatty acids, fish, are available in cans and pouches, like this article says. You can get pouches of tuna fish that are seasoned. You don't even have to add anything to them, or you can drizzle some olive oil on top of them. You don't necessarily have to use mayonnaise. If you do use mayonnaise, it's a good idea to use mayonnaise that doesn't have seed oil in it. So a lot of mayonnaise, even organic mayonnaise, has canola oil in it. Well, you can get mayonnaise that has avocado oil instead. It may cost a little bit more, but it's worth it. And I'm starting to exclusively purchase mayonnaise that has olive oil as the only oil in it. And you can buy these delicious mayonnaises. You can get them plain, and you can get them. There's one brand that has plain, pesto flavored, and chipotle flavored. So I'm trying all of those. It's nice. So when you're eating the Mediterranean diet, there are foods that are going to cause more inflammation. So if you eat fried foods, they can have a higher level of acrylamide, which is a chemical byproduct that is thought to make inflammation. If you saute, steam, or boil your foods, that's going to be healthier for you. When we like to have potatoes, when we like French fries, so we do oven fried. Ron will cut up the potatoes, put some seasoning on it, put a little bit of olive oil, and stick them in the oven. And that's how we eat them. So he doesn't deep fry them. and refined carbohydrates that are made from white flour, they're going to contribute to high blood sugar, which can create oxidative stress, set off low-grade inflammation. So you want higher fiber carbs, like whole grains that aid your digestion and lower your heart disease. Added sugars in your sugary beverages, sweets, desserts, they promote inflammation. In animals, at least, they can do so by altering the gut microbiome. So if you stay away from added sugars, that this doesn't mean stay away from fruit. It means stay away from sweets and cakes and pastries and things like that. And in about a day, you alter your microbiome and reduce inflammation. It doesn't take long to see benefits of it. So it's really worth trying a trial of no refined sugars if you can do it. Processed meats like lunch meats, bacon, sausage are linked to inflammation that can contribute to cancer. And also, there's a concern about being overweight. The thing is, if you're overweight and then you all of a sudden drop sugar and you drop these lunch meats and refined carbohydrates and refined flour, and you suddenly stop eating those, it's going to take you less time to reduce your inflammation significantly than it will take you to lose weight. So in a couple of days of not eating sugar, not eating processed food, eating an entirely whole foods diet, your body's going to change. And you will probably lose weight at some point, but it takes you a lot longer to lose weight than 3 days unless you starve yourself. And we don't want you to starve yourself. We want you to eat. I think it's important to eat to get the nutrients you need for your healthy diet and for you to have a healthy, to feel good and have a good lifestyle. So it takes very little time to see changes in inflammatory markers and inflammation in your body. And if you stick with a added sugar-free and get rid of refined flour and other refined foods in your diet, and you know, you don't drink alcohol and just eat a very clean diet, 2 weeks time you're going to be a lot healthier, and there's measurable markers that you can see change. You might see a change in your LDL cholesterol, you might see a lowering of your triglycerides, a raise in your HDL, a lowering of your blood pressure. And you might sleep better, your energy might improve, and those are all things that can happen a lot sooner than just losing the weight. And it's more important to eat that way than it is to actually lose weight. It's more important to have reduced inflammation than it is to fit some sort of number on a scale. Having said that, if you do those things, if you eat in a way that's going to lower inflammation and, you know, get rid of sugar and reduce your insulin and reduce your blood sugar and all those things, you're probably going to lose weight. So that's a way to do it. And you don't necessarily have to go on a crazy special diet. You just have to eat vegetables and fruit, small amounts of whole grains, avoid refined flour, eat legumes like beans and lentils, nuts and seeds, and clean animal protein and monounsaturated fatty acids. So, I mean, the things that have monounsaturated fats are technically fruits. So avocado and olives are technically fruits. I mean, they grow from a flower and then they produce these wonderful monounsaturated fats that are really good for you. So Rana eat a lot of avocados. He buys so many avocados, and he eats one or two avocados every day. I don't eat as many avocados as he does, but when he makes salad, he throws half an avocado in my salad. So I have, on salad days, I have half an avocado. And right now, we're having salads almost every night because the leafy greens are tremendous right now. On the nights we don't have, there's rare nights that we don't have salad. We often don't have salad on burger night because we're having a big piece of protein and it's just too much. So on burger night, we usually put vegetables on our burgers. So there's pickles and a little ketchup and good mayo, and lettuce and tomato go on the burger. And then we have our oven fries. And then and most other nights we will have salad, and we'll have salad with protein. Last night was salad with barbecued chicken breast, and that's what we had. And sometimes we have stir fry, and the stir fry is going to have a green like a bok choy, peppers, carrots. It'll be sauteed in virgin coconut oil or olive oil, and sometimes broccoli, and then some kind of protein, which will probably usually is chicken breast. Sometimes it's shrimp. We don't do a lot of red meat. Ron will eat a beef burger, and I stopped really feeling like eating beef since the pandemic, since I had the vaccines, has made it harder for me to deal with beef. So when I have a burger, I have a turkey burger. So, and turkey agrees with me very well, probably because I was born on Thanksgiving. Who knows? But turkey is lean and it's high in protein and it's very digestible. I like that it's slightly gamey tasting. So anyway, so that's the Mediterranean diet for you. All right. So we want you to get outdoors. So let's talk about why forest bathing is good for you. I've talked about why being outside is good for you for many times, but let's talk specifically about forest bathing and how it's good for you. We've had a long heat spell where I think yesterday it was up to close to 90. It was mid-80s. It was very hot yesterday. And now we're having a spell. There's a cold front coming down from Canada right now. And so it's very refreshing. And we have Hurricane Erin coming up. And it looks like Hurricane Erin is not going to take any direct hits on the east coast of the United States, but it is going to cause rip currents. So if you're going to the beach, be careful of rip currents. Pay attention to the flags and the signs and what the lifeguards say, and follow instructions. If you go in the water, you swim across the tide of the rip current. And if the rip current's really bad, maybe don't go in. Just go enjoy the water. Maybe go in up to your ankles and don't dunk yourself in the ocean because you don't want to be taken away by a rip current. Somebody passed, Malcolm Jamal Warner, who is the guy who played, he was in the Bill Cosby show. He passed in the last month, and it was because he got caught in a rip current, which is just awful. What a way to go. He's on a family vacation and he got caught in a rip current. So we don't want that to happen to you. So Erin is sending us rip current. So be very careful. Meanwhile, we're having some cooler weather this week where it's going to be in the 70s for a number of days. I think we're not going to see 80 again until the end of the week and the weekend, and maybe not so high in the 80s. And so we had the air conditioning on for many days in a row, and we're finally able to turn it off and open up the house. And I much prefer that when it's in the 70s and it's you get the nice fresh air in the house. I like it when it's a little bit hot and I get to go swimming. And I thought that Bicentennial Pond was done for the season, but it's apparently not, because I spoke with the lifeguard yesterday and she said that I'm scheduled to be here for the next couple of weeks. So maybe it's going to be open longer than I thought, which is great. So I might go back to Bicentennial Pond. Anyway, so what is forest bathing good for you? It's good stuff. So it's a Japanese art of forest bathing. It can improve focus, lower your stress. In Japanese, it's known as Shinrin-yoku. It's a mindfulness practice that involves immersing yourself in nature. And this practice is decades old. And there's research that shows that spending time in nature can help lower your stress levels and improve your focus. Recently, forest bathing is growing in popularity. Thanks to social media, where people are sharing their experience exploring forests and other green spaces and taking in all they have to offer. Many, many videos are on TikTok with the tagline, hashtag forest bathing. So go check that out if you're into TikTok. You can look at what people are saying about doing their forest bathing. Users say they've seen an improvement to their mental health. It's slowing down, connecting to nature with all your senses. It's about being in a natural setting and being present, says Mark Ellison, who's a certified forest therapy guide and trail consultant, and he's the founder of Pinnacle Forest Therapy. Key things are to find a place where you can spend some time uninterrupted and notice the things that are around you. Forest bathing can be done on your own or with a guide, like this guy Ellison. He founded the first certified forest therapy trail in North Carolina, which is at Pinnacle Park. There he guides people along the trail and encourages them to notice what they hear, see, smell, and feel along the journey. The experiences Ellison leads usually last about an hour and a half, involve minimal talking to prioritize periods of reflection and meditation, and can sometimes be an emotional experience. Some people actually cry during the walks. It's really a contrast to how we usually spend our days, which are usually distracting in stressful environments. And what he doesn't say is screens, screens, screens. I've got three screens in front of me right now. I'm reading from an iPad. I'm looking at a Samsung tablet, and I am recording the show on a laptop. So I've got three screens. Oh, and then here's my phone. Phone's right here. So I got four screens in front of me. I'm not actually looking at the phone. Well, now I am. So screens are exhausting, and I'll repeat something I've said a number of times. When you are looking at a screen, your focus is very narrow, and you are looking at small characters, and you're looking at pixels. And when you're looking at pixels, are an approximation of an image, and your eyes and your brain have to synthesize those images. And when you are looking out at the forest, when you're looking out in nature, your vision is panoramic. It's much more relaxing. You don't have to focus intently on small characters. So it's a lot better for your brain. It helps the muscles in your face and your eyes to relax, and it gives your nervous system a break. So some people seek forest bathing as a way to deal with grief. This gentleman, Elson, he's guided a number of individuals and families who came to the forest bathing experience to remember someone who passed away who was connected to nature. It can really benefit your mental health. When people spend more time in nature, it can have great benefits on how they feel. One of the key things about forest bathing and how it supports mental health is that through our senses, it helps us to calm down. We're always in a hurry. We're always connected to technology in our homes, and so it's disconnecting from that. Elson encourages people who forest bathe to turn their phones off or put them on silent if they feel comfortable doing it. Avoid the temptation to take pictures and check social media and those sorts of things. Be fully, so, you know, when you see something gorgeous in nature, you want to take a picture. So he says, why don't you put your phone down? Don't worry about it. And just look at what's around you. When you forest bathe, it can also enhance your attention span. It aligns with attention restoration theory. Which was introduced by Stephen and Rachel Kaplan at the University of Michigan, which suggests that when you spend time in nature, it helps your attention capacities that we use on a daily basis to relax. It keeps us engaged enough to be interested and not bored, but lets our primary attention capacities rest, and so that's like a muscle. When they get fatigued, they're not as effective. You can start in small doses, like with anything. You can start doing a little bit and increase during time. To get the benefits of forest bathing, you don't have to head to a trail if you're not comfortable. You can even be done in your backyard or a local garden or a park and bring somebody along to make the experience less nouveau or scary or weird. And you don't have to do it for 90 minutes to start. 10 minutes of being in nature can be really helpful. 10-15 minutes of any kind of mindfulness practice. That's why when people are like, well, I don't have time to do yoga because you have to go somewhere and you have to take a whole hour class. And I tell people, I mean, if you look at Cassandra on YouTube, she always talks about that it's much better to do 10 minutes of yoga most days than it is to set yourself up at a class, at a facility once a week or a couple times a month. So if you can do something locally, if you have nature near your house, or especially if you have a nice yard, you can sit and stare at the trees and in your backyard, and that's going to be really helpful for you. And do it for just 15 minutes to start with that. And then if you feel comfortable, you can go on longer periods of time in nature. Start in small doses, keep a journal, write down some of the things you experience and notice when you're there. And if you don't have easy access to green spaces, like you live in a city or something, surround yourself with nature by getting plants for your space. So put plants in your apartment or your house. You can hang photos of beautiful landscapes on your walls, or use them as screensavers. Listen to nature-inspired sounds like ocean waves. So forest bathing is really great for you. And remember, we talked a while back about when you go into the forest, trees give out a compound called phytonicides. And those are good for your immune system. They're antimicrobial, and they encourage well-being in general. So that's forest bathing. Okay, so another topic I wanted to talk about was you can be a super ager. And what's a super ager? Somebody who ages very well. So here's a woman who's 95, who made it to 95, and she shares her secrets. So this is about a woman named Sally Froelich, who at 95, this article came out when she was 95, so I think she's 96 now. She started working at Macy's in New York City in 1950, and then went on to Bloomingdale's, I don't even know if Bloomingdale's is still there. And she was hired to interview people during the morning breakfast offerings. She interacted with customers, and it created the Sally Frolic Show, which aired for more than 20 years. The guests would talk to her, and the audience would ask questions, and it was fun. There was a series for the show called The Vital Years, where she talked with different experts about the aging process. And she was already 60 at the time, which would have been 36 years ago. So 36 years ago, where are we? We're in, this is 2025. So that's 1994. Wow. When she was 60. So, it was about people who are her age today, second marriages, exercise, different problems, grandchildren. When she remembered the series, it struck a chord with her, as she's one of 600 people participating in the Super Agers Family Study, which was conducted by the American Federation for Aging Research. The study aims to recruit 10,000 super agers, who researchers define as people 95 and older who are in good physical and mental health. The study also enrolls the super agers' adult children and the children's spouses who do not have still super ager parents. They're just as important as the super agers because we need to draw comparisons in the frequency of the genes. So this is being studied by Sophia Millman at Albert Einstein College of Medicine. The ultimate goal of the study is to understand what biology contributes to people living long, healthy lives, and we're interested in what genes may play a role in contributing to people's ability to stay disease-free as they get older. If you identify the genes that contribute to people's longevity, Millman hopes that scientists will be able to develop medications and drugs that can mimic the role of genes that superagers possess, so that others who do not inherit those genes can also live longer, healthier lives. I think if you eat foods that have antioxidants in them, that you're doing the same thing. I don't know why you'd have to take a pharmaceutical. I mean, if you're eating your, again, the Mediterranean diet, fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds and olive oil, monounsaturated fats, and omega-3 fatty acids, all of these are going to help reduce inflammation. And one of the things that I'll remind you of is that when you consume antioxidants, one of the things that antioxidants does is it helps with healthy gene expression. It makes it so that your genes don't get damaged, so that they don't express incorrectly. So you're less likely to get cancer when you consume a lot of antioxidants. Genes play a more prominent role than lifestyle in superagers. She determined that by comparing the lifestyles of superagers from previous studies to the lifestyles of people from their generation who did not become superagers. We found that they had very similar lifestyles. They didn't differ in smoking, tobacco, or alcohol use, or in their diet or exercise, so there are really no differences, and yet a small group achieved superager status and another group did not. So lifestyle does still matter for longevity, despite your genes. While more Americans are living longer lives than past generations, only about 0.1% live to be 95 or older, mostly due to genetics. For the other 99.9% of the population, she said lifestyle habits can help stave off age-related diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. The difference is that you can probably delay the onset of age-related diseases with a healthy lifestyle, though it's unclear whether having a healthy lifestyle will get you to 95 or 100. One way to think about it is that 20 to 40% of longevity is due to your genes, which means that 60 to 80% is lifestyle. And that was stated by Roseanne Leipzig, who's a geriatrician at Mount Sinai Hospital. And she wrote a book called Honest Aging, An Insider's Guide to the Second Half of Life. Some of it comes down to lucky circumstances, and you don't have a lot of control over the education you get, prenatal environment, childhood nutrition, access to medical care, whether you live in a polluted area, which can also contribute to help in longevity. There's the concept of weathering, which says that the health of African American women may begin to deteriorate in early adulthood as a physical consequence of cumulative socioeconomic disadvantage. When given access to healthy lifestyle choices, how you choose them can make a difference. We do have a lot of control. You can certainly make sure you die early, she says. So here's some things that you can do to help you be a superager and live a longer, healthier life. One of them is to drink plenty of water. I don't know if it's in this list, but I certainly think that hydration is going to be helpful. Eat a balanced diet. There's a shock. So this is what Sally Frolic does, who's the 96-year-old lady that we're talking about. She does eat three meals a day, and she doesn't overeat. Don't smoke or drink excessively. Smokers experience 3 times the risk of dying prematurely from heart disease or stroke than non-smokers. There was a study found that adults who drink 7 to 14 drinks per week could expect, on average, a 6-month shorter life expectancy as of age 40. Maintain a healthy weight. Frolic's weight hasn't changed in 50 years. Mazel tov. Her body has changed. She's gotten, she says, dumpier, but that's part of life. So that means there's a distribution issue, but her weight hasn't changed. Do get regular exercise. Surprise, surprise. So Sally Frolic played sports most of her life and continues to golf 2 or 3 times a week and exercises 6 days a week for 20 minutes. She does daily stretches. She does 80 sit-ups in bed when she wakes up. And 3 days a week, she lifts 8-pound weights with her arms and 5 pounds with her legs. So she's doing a little bit of resistance training. She's playing golf, which involves a lot of work, walking, and then she's doing stretches and some resistance. Use your brain. So Sally Frolic plays bridge once a week with friends and a few times a week online. My mother plays bridge several times a week, but she does, I don't know if she plays it online. She plays other things online. She does Sudoku. But my mom plays bridge probably 2 or 3 times every week, maybe more some weeks. She listens to audiobooks and watches TV in the morning and evening. She stays socially connected. In May 2023, I talked about this, about the loneliness epidemic. The U.S. Surgeon General in May 2023 issued a report stating that half of American adults are lonely and that loneliness poses several risks to health, severe risks to health and longevity. In addition to golfing, stay connected to others. Sally Frolic goes to lunch and out to dinner on a weekly basis. She sees her children once a week, tries to visit with her grandchildren in person or Zoom. If she's been hanging around the house a lot, she just goes out and walks around the block. So that's what I say to people. Some people say they don't have people that they see regularly. There are ways you can get out and meet people. One of them would be to go for a walk in a park. Here in Mansfield, you could go to Mansfield Hall, or you're going to run into people. You can go walking in Willimantic if you want to. If you, I tell people just go hang out at the Willimantic Food Co-op. It's a safe place to be. They have tables and chairs in the front. You can have a snack. You can have a tea or a coffee and a snack and just sit there and you'll meet people and you'll get to talk to people. And you know, you could join a club that has an interest that you're interested in. You could join a walking or a hiking club. And again, it doesn't have to be very long walks or hikes, but, you know, there might be a mall walking club or something, a club that goes and walks out at a local park. Find joy. So Sally Frolic feels lucky to be alive in her 90s and says it's important to do what you want to do and make you happy. And do eat some ice cream and chocolate if you want to. So you don't want to have that as a steady diet, because we just talked about getting off of sugar and refined flour and stuff like that. But if you are generally healthy and all your numbers are good, your blood sugar and your cholesterol and all that, if you have dessert a couple times a week, it's probably not going to hurt you. Do self-care. Have some care about how you look. Do your hair, get your nails done, keep looking nice. And if you have somebody that tells you if you have a spot on you or anything is off, that's a good thing too. And then think about aging as a good thing. Your perception of aging influences what their aging will be like, but not necessarily longevity. There's good work out there that suggests that people with a positive perception of aging live about 7.5 more years and live better. The bottom line, when you live to be a super ager, it's not necessarily in your genes, but as people age, disability and disease are not a given. There are many people who remain healthy and independent and have a good quality of life as they get older, so we shouldn't conflate aging with disease and disability. Super agers give hope for discovering the secret to aging well, and we hope the research will help us all live longer, even if we're not that 0.1% of the population who inherit the genes. Now, there was a link here to a study about super aging. Yeah, the Super Agers Family Study. Let's see what this says. You can join the Super Agers. Okay, this is the Super Agers. This is about how to join it. So you can join the Super Agers Family Study if you want to. There's a link here. So just, I would put in your search engine, Super Agers Family Study, and it will take you to a link where you can join it. So they can study you. All right. Melon. Melon's good for you. We've been eating a lot of watermelon in the last week because the watermelon is ready. Our local friends who run Tobacco Road Farm are growing watermelon, so we have a couple of watermelons from them. I also bought a local muskmelon, which is similar to a honeydew melon, and I'm going to cut that up. When I was on the boat, I had some honeydew melon with Rob and Kimberly, and we had gone to a small supermarket in Lyme or Old Lyme, and it might have been the IGA, I'm not sure. And we got a container of pre-cut honeydew melon, and it was heavenly. It was so good. We ate the whole thing. You know, there was none left, and I just kept offering it around and eating some myself, and we finished off the container. It was that good. So honeydew melon specifically is something that's good for you, and I love it. So here's the nutrition and benefits for honeydew melon. Honeydew melon or honey melon belongs to the melon species Cucumis melo, which is in the muskmelon family. And so I have a muskmelon out there that I'm looking forward to cutting into. The sweet flesh of the honeydew is typically light green. It's a beautiful shade of spring, fresh spring light green. It's so gorgeous. And the skin has a white-yellow tone. The size and shape are similar to its relative, which is a cantaloupe. Honeydew melon is available worldwide and can be eaten itself or in desserts. You can grow it here in Connecticut if you want to. Used in desserts, salads, snacks, and soups. Its greatest appeal may be the flavor. It's also nutritious and have a lot of benefits. Before we get to talk about how great the honeydew melon is, let's remind you about oral allergy syndrome. So oral allergy syndrome is a syndrome where if you eat certain raw fruits, you get itching and irritation in your lips and in your mouth. That goes away pretty quickly, but it can happen. So specifically, if you have a ragweed allergy or a grass allergy, you may experience oral allergy syndrome when you eat honeydew melon and cantaloupe. They can include itchiness or swelling of your mouth, face, lips, or tongues. They usually happen right away after eating the raw food, but can also happen an hour later. And you don't think about cooking honeydew or cantaloupe, but if you get honeydew or cantaloupe jam, you'll probably be fine because the proteins that cause oral allergy syndrome are inactivated by cooking. So if you find if you are allergic to grasses or ragweed, you're more likely to have a melon allergy. If you're allergic to certain trees, then you're going to have an issue with rose family. So the rose family, all your stone fruits are in the rose family, Rosaceae. And the roses, so that's going to be your peaches, nectarines, plums, and you bite into them and you get the same thing happening. Again, if you eat peach cobbler, where the peach is cooked, or the nectarine, or the plum, or whatever, plum jam, it's not going to happen because that's specifically what oral allergy syndrome is. There's certain proteins that cause the syndrome that are inactivated by heating. So honeydew melon, it has a diverse nutrient profile. It's a great asset of this melon. A 1 cup serving has about 62 calories, which is good for a serving of fruit. Has a whole bunch of fiber, a little bit of protein, no fat, 34% of your RDI of vitamin C, a little bit of B6 and folate and vitamin K, and 8% of your RDI of potassium, and a little tiny bit of magnesium. Honeydew melon may reduce blood pressure. When you eat fruits and vegetables in general, it reduces your risk of high blood pressure and heart disease. A low sodium diet and adequate potassium intake can positively influence your blood pressure regulation. And honeydew melon is low in sodium, and it's a potassium-rich fruit, so it can help you maintain healthy blood pressure levels. If you want to increase your potassium intake, you can add honeydew to your diet. 1 cup has about 8% of the RDI. There's nutrients in honeydew melon that are good for your bone health. There's vitamin K in honeydew melon, has about 4% of the RDI of the vitamin, and vitamin K is involved in the production of major structural protein called osteocalcin. So if you make adequate vitamin K, it's good for healthy bones. You can get a little bit of magnesium with a serving of honeydew. The cells responsible for building and breaking down bone tissue need magnesium to function properly. So magnesium is another nutrient vital for health, for bone health. Honeydew also has a little bit of other bone-supporting nutrients like calcium, phosphorus, and zinc. While these nutrients are not highly concentrated in honeydew, when you add the fruit to your diet, you can support your bone health when you eat a myriad of fruits and vegetables, like you eat the Mediterranean diet, which we're trying to suggest that you do. It can help you with your blood sugar management. There's research that indicates that regularly eating fruits like honeydew might promote good blood sugar levels. There was a 2022 study in over 79,000 adults that suggested that eating whole fresh fruit daily was associated with a 2.8 lower risk of diabetes in people without diabetes. And a larger but older study from 2017 in 500,000 people found that those who consumed fresh fruit daily were 12% less likely to develop diabetes than those who rarely ate fruit. And those participants who already had diabetes at the beginning of the study, when they added fruit at least 3 times a week, it led to a 13 to 28% lower risk of experiencing diabetes-related health complications, with a 17% lower risk of premature death. So if you eat fruit, you're less likely to die. This is very nice. Honeydew melon has carbs that can raise your blood sugar temporarily, but it also has fiber and other nutrients that ultimately help you to improve your blood sugar regulation. Honeydew has electrolytes and water. When you think of hydration, water is probably the first thing that comes to mind. Your body needs more than that to effectively and properly hydrate. It also needs electrolytes. Honeydew is about 90% water. It contains electrolytes like potassium, magnesium, sodium, and calcium. The combination of water and nutrients makes honeydew great for hydrating after a workout, illness, or just throughout the day. It can help support healthy skin. There's a lot of vitamin C in honeydew. And there's vitamin C and there's water and there's fiber. There's a bunch of things that can help you with your skin. Adequate C intake is necessary for the proper production of collagen, which is a major structural protein that's vital for repairing and maintaining skin tissue. Because vitamin C is a powerful antioxidant, some research indicates it may protect your skin against sun damage. Honeydew is an excellent source of vitamin C. One cup provides about 34% of your RDI. You can get vitamin C from various foods. Honeydew is one way to quickly meet your needs and promote your skin health. It can also help to support your immune system because of the vitamin C. And so the human immune system is complex. It requires a lot of nutrients to function properly, and vitamin C is a critical component. Adequate dietary vitamin C can reduce the length and manage symptoms of some respiratory and systemic infections like pneumonia and the common cold, and may also help prevent other health conditions like cancer or cardiovascular disease. One cup of honeydew has, as we said, 34% of the RDI. So it can help with proper digestion because of the fiber and the water that's in it. Adequate fiber helps to slow your blood sugar response, promotes bowel regularity, and promotes the growth of healthy bacteria. A single cup of honeydew provides about 1.4 grams, or about 5% of the RDI for fiber. Though many other fruits contain more fiber per serving, honeydew can still contribute to your daily fiber intake. Some people have with certain digestive disorders, those who are newly introducing or reintroducing fiber into the diet, a lower fiber fruit like honeydew may be better tolerated than a really high fiber, like eating 2 tablespoons of ground flax seeds or chia seeds. It can help to support your vision and eye health because there's lutein and zeaxanthin in honeydew. Who knew? Those are carotenoids that are known for supporting eye health and preventing the development of age-related vision loss. When you regularly eat foods that contain these antioxidants like honeydew, it can support proper eye function through your life. You can add honeydew to your diet easily. It's widely available. It's not too expensive. And you want to make sure it's ripe. If it's out of season or unripe, they're flavorless and they're not as much fun to eat. But if you're looking for something a little more creative, you can enjoy it in other ways. You can slice some honeydew into bite-sized pieces in your salad. And what I like to recommend, if you're going to do that, then if you want to put nuts in your salad, try pecans because they tend to have a sweeter flavor profile. And you can throw in dried cranberries or goji berries and then use balsamic vinegar as your vinegar of choice for that salad. And so you'll have it'll tend towards the sweet side for your salad. So you can put it over your green salad. You can puree the melon and use it a base for popsicles or ice cream. You can serve sliced melon along with cottage cheese or blend it into a smoothie. You can have honeydew as the base of a chilled soup with peppers, mint, and cucumber. So that's a nice way to go, like a nice summer cool soup. You can wrap slices of melon with cured meat. So like melon with prosciutto and a little bit of cheese. That's really awesome. And you can also add melon to a salsa. Honeydew melon is a sweet fruit. It can be found worldwide. It's light green. The rind is typically white or yellow. It has vitamins, minerals, and other health-promoting plant compounds. When you eat that type of melon, it can have several health benefits, mainly due to its rich nutrient content. It can be eaten by itself or as part of other dishes like soups, salads, smoothies, and more. Make sure it's in season and ripe. So I'm telling you about this now because they're ready now. All the melons are, we have such abundance. August, in late July, all of August into early September, we just have so much produce. We are out of our minds with produce. Our refrigerator is just stuffed with all kinds of good things. And Ron comes home with big bags of produce all the time. And, you know, we get to go to the farmer's market and we get great stuff there. I love my stone fruits, my peaches and my plums and my nectarines. So I have those. And I eat berries all the time. I eat berries all year, whether they're frozen or I get them fresh organic from the store. But they go on my yogurt or they go on my my overnight oats. So I'm big on them all the time. Right now we're eating more melon because we've got cut up watermelon. I haven't cut up the honeydew because we have so much watermelon. So I'm trying to see. At some point I'm going to have to cut the honeydew and get it in the fridge. So I may have to do that sooner rather than later. Anyway, so please enjoy your melon and melon-flavored things. All right? Okay, so I had a series of supplements that may help with fat loss. And so I wanted to talk about those. And so I'll go through them maybe once a week. We'll go through about one a week after talking about the other things. I only have about a minute left. So maybe it would be a good time to, we'll start talking about some of those supplements next week. All right. So I'm going to let you go because it's about that time. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening.